Welcome to CompTIA's Shark Bites podcast with Alan Shark, Executive Director at the Public Technology Institute.
Hi, everyone. This is Alan Shark, and welcome to another episode of CompTIA's Shark Bites, the podcast series where we interview people across the country having to do with technology leadership with a focus on city, county, and sometimes state government types of matters. At the time of this recording, we have gone through an election and we've gone through Cybersecurity Awareness Month, and we can see that the role of the local government chief information security officer, or CISO, has never been greater. This title is relatively new within local government and is quickly raising in stature and importance. Unfortunately, all too often, the CISO is viewed as all about doom and gloom by colleagues. I was pleased to have the opportunity recently to sit down with two of the leading CISOs in the local government tech community to hear their concerns, their worries, more importantly, their strategies to maintain effective security practices in their organizations. I think you will find the conversation both upbeat and enlightening. So please join me in our conversation with Brian Gartner, CISO of City of Dallas, Texas, and Greg McCarthy, CISO, City of Boston, Massachusetts. Welcome to you both.
So let's start out. We know that CISO, well, the role has been around for a while, but the title is somewhat new. So I would like to get a better sense of your backgrounds. And let's start with you, Greg. I mean, this is something you didn't sign up for, so I'm going to be a CISO. So I'd be, prepared, Brian, you're going to get the same question. How did this all begin for you?
Sure. So I've been with the City of Boston for just over 10 years. I started as actually a project manager on the cybersecurity team. So in the City of Boston, cybersecurity has been its own discipline probably for about 11 and a half years. So my predecessor and I were the first two people to start building the program. The role of CISO historically had lived within our infrastructure team. So I previously reported up to our chief technology officer, and up about a year and a half ago is when the role of CISO started to report directly to the CIO, and our CIO at the Department of Innovation Technology reports directly to our mayor. So it's been in existence for about 6 years, the actual title of CISO. Prior to that, it was Director of Security.
Cool. Brian.
So thanks, Alan. So I've been in this role for approximately a year and a half. I've been with the City of Dallas almost 3 years. Prior to being the CISO for the City of Dallas, I was its risk and compliance manager. I was head of our regulatory compliance and IT, as well as risk reporting. About a year and a half ago, they promoted me into this position. It was completely a new position for the city. Prior to this, we had an assistant director that was filling this, managing the cybersecurity piece for the IT. That's how I got into this position.
So, you know, here we are. We see nothing but threats, and threats. What keeps you up the most at night? We'll start with you, Greg.
So part of it, I try not to be a doom and gloom person. I think every CISO, really anybody in technology, stays up at night with the concern that they're going to be the next Atlanta or Baltimore, the next major city to have some sort of large scale cyber disruption, whether it's a ransomware event or a denial of service attack. I think that's what keeps all of us up at night in the technology leadership field, specifically CISOs. But I think part of what our role as a CISO is to prepare the organization for when that happens. They always use the buzz term of it's not if, it's when. So I think that's what we're all really preparing for in technology in general, not just state and local or government, municipal government. I think we have If we're working towards communicating well with our organization in our role, we can ensure that we're prepared and doing the best we can to prevent or at least reduce the amount of damage a large scale cyber disruption could have on the city.
Yeah. Brian, you look kind of calm. What keeps you up at night?
I would have to agree with Greg. It's not necessarily, ransomware obviously is at the top of the list because we've seen a lot of that action in cities and counties, but there's plenty of other instances that we could point to. I'm sure Greg has a lot as well that are outside of the ransomware. For me, in being in this role such a short time, it's kind of, what is my blind side? I don't know what I don't know. Understanding all of the infrastructure and understanding all the intricacies around the city and the IT within it. So that is probably what keeps me up most at night, is not knowing what I don't know as far as it. And then having to worry about, okay, is my team prepared to take action appropriately when there's an event? And have we trained and tested enough to get to that point? So that's what keeps me up at night.
And my guess is we're never satisfied with the training that we have today, regardless of what happens. So here we are being recorded at a time of COVID, and we've all had to pivot in some very dramatic ways and some very quick ways. So Brian, you know, this is kind of new. I mean, all of a sudden, you know, you have endpoints you have to worry about. Now you have thousands of new endpoints. How have you managed that and still feel that you've got control of the system?
So, on the flip side of being not at the city so long, the positive is I came from private. And so working remote was almost in my DNA. So I wasn't overly concerned. I knew the things we needed to do. And I have a fairly young team. They've done the remote work thing before. So pivoting, although there was a lot of work and a lot of preparation and a lot of things to consider, we worked through each of the problems fairly quickly to getting it almost to be a seamless change from everybody being on premise here to being remote and then being able to manage it. As like I said, along the way, we are finding those things we didn't know. So those are the more problematic things that we're having to work through. But overall, our team did a really good job of pivoting fairly quickly on that. We have some improvement to do, obviously, but it went fairly smoothly.
Greg, same situation.
I would echo a lot of what Brian said. So with the city of Boston, we were not a remote workforce. That was not a possibility for our employees. But we were able to pivot very quickly because of a lot of the hard work and infrastructure and underlying technology that we had in place to easily make that, or not necessarily easily, but more easily making that pivot to a remote workforce. I think the teams worked tirelessly to ensure that it was as smooth a transition as possible for our employees. We wanted to ensure that they could get working from home as quickly as possible and actually off of the City Hall network and onto their home network. I think the other thing that we were really focusing on is how do we now educate people about the risks of being remote, because that we provide security awareness and training for our staff, but it wasn't necessarily focused primarily on working remotely. So that was another area that we looked at ensuring that our employees really understood what the additional risks are and how to potentially protect themselves while they're in a different environment, because working at home, even though you're working and doing your day-to-day job, it's still, your environment is different. So the chances are that you're going to engage in different activities that you may not normally do if you were sitting at your desk on City Hall property.
You know, some homes operate almost like shared services or open networks. How do you control that? I mean, the two things that I hear is, one, I can't control the Wi-Fi in somebody's home unless I provide them a Wi-Fi card. Or how do I convince people they cannot use their own equipment? So it's one thing to provide guidelines. I mean, how strict were your rules? I mean, obviously it's working. And I should say that part of what you've pivoted towards was probably aimed at a more temporary situation. Now this looks like this is going to be much longer, maybe a year, maybe more. Maybe this will be permanent or some kind of hybrid of what we have today. So what changes do you see in terms of making sure that all the endpoints are better protected? Brian?
So what we did is we started out with a strict policy that we would deploy only city-owned devices to our users, and that was what was allowed. Now, from a problem perspective, we ran out of devices. So we have a small footprint of BYOD. What we did is we added additional controls around their access into the city to try to compensate for that BYOD presence. Long-term, we are moving to everyone that will be remote will have a city-owned device, so they won't be using that BYOD through some funding that we've incurred. So that's what our game plan is. And to be honest, our long-term plan is to allow those users that can be remote to stay remote based on the department's decisions, including IT. So yeah, that's what our direction is.
Cool. Greg?
We were in a very similar situation as Brian was at Dallas. We did not have enough devices to provide to all of our workforce. So there was a BYOD presence. And it was really just understanding the risk associated with BYOD devices. They potentially have access to less systems or less services than city-issued devices. We are working and we're hopeful that some of the CARES Act funding will help to allow for us to deploy more laptops to our remote workforce users. We also were looking at how we can ensure that we're allowing them to connect to applications or through web services. So if we're providing some of our central services that are publicly accessible over the internet with the correct controls, we can offer people using BYOD devices access to potentially sensitive systems in a secure way.
Yeah. So you mentioned training earlier, and I guess my question now is, you know, how comfortable are you today with the training that you're providing your employees? Greg?
I think like anything in technology, there's always room for improvement. We have increased the consistency of messaging to our employee population. So we've had really great support from our press office and our mayor's office to continue to push communications to our employees around, because we're trying to communicate with them to ensure that they're being safe and healthy. But some of that messaging is around how to be safe while working from home, as we mentioned before. So we've increased our regularity of communication to our employees. We're also doing our annual cybersecurity awareness training as part of Cybersecurity Awareness Month. So we're looking to see how we can better educate our employees throughout the year as well.
Cool. Brian?
So for us, we got a little lucky. The state of Texas has enacted legislation to pushing all government employees, including elected officials, if you do more than 25% of your job on a device. So we've had a program in place going on 2 years now to training those users on how to be more effective in the cyber world. In addition to that, we run testing campaigns against those users to make sure that the training is taken, and even following up with remedial training for those users we find is problematic to pushing that message. And additionally, we partnered with the what they call the PAO, the Public Affairs Office here, to getting the word out as much as we can to the employees as supplemental education for them. So we're finding our numbers have grown significantly over the past 2 years as people reporting things they see as malicious or they think is malicious, and really getting with my security team and helping us understand where those problems can be.
Great. I'm going to switch gears and talk about cyber insurance. You know, you worried, Brian, about ransomware. You mentioned that specifically, although you're worried about things you may not necessarily be thinking about at any given moment. That's always the case for all of us. But it seems that the criminal elements have gotten bolder. And one of the reasons that were always cited for people not paying any ransom was, you know, you have no assurance that they will ever pay. I've come to recognize that I think the criminals have a code of ethics, believe it or not, and that is they're going to deliver if you pay, because it would be so against them to default because no one would ever pay. So we're in a dilemma now. So many people think that cyber insurance is the best mitigating factor that you have to kind of protect the downside or to minimize risk. So let me start with you, Greg. I mean, does the city of Boston have cyber insurance? Is that something you've been involved with?
We do not currently have a cyber insurance plan as part of our insurance policies. But we've looked at it, and we've tried to determine what the cost benefit of having those plans in place are. As of now, we're not pursuing one, but we're always investigating whether or not it makes sense, and it's more cost efficient to do that. We do have a policy that we won't pay the ransom. But from what I understand, I think some of the cyber insurance policies grant the ability, or you can say that the cyber insurance policy paid the ransom and on behalf of you. So that's questionable. I don't know that we would do that either, but hopefully we won't be in that situation anytime in the near future to worry
about. It's interesting because some people think that having cyber insurance might cause you to be more of a target because they're the ones more likely to pay. Brian. Cyber insurance in your city?
So yes, Alan, we do have cyber insurance within the city of Dallas. We've had it for quite a while, actually. We have the same policy as Boston. We do not pay a ransom. It was really put in place quite a bit before this whole ransomware, these attacks started. So it was really to offset some of the risk. Because that's the approach that we take as far as cybersecurity here is really a risk-based approach, and insurance falls into one of those components of risk. So that's why we chose to do it. And we review it on an annual basis to make sure that we feel we have sufficient coverage and for what the possible attacks could be, as well as do we have sufficient coverage to help mitigate that risk.
Yeah, good. So the next question I want to kind of focus on is, how do you stay current? There's so many things. And besides PTI, CompTIA being a wealth of information, where are you getting most of your information on a regular basis, Greg, to kind of give you a feeling that you're up to date, you know what's going on in neighboring communities and other parts of the country, understanding the trends? I mean, there are some sources, probably be helpful to those dialing in to understand what they are.
Yeah, so in the city of Boston, we leverage a lot of MSISACs, the Multi-State Information Sharing and Analysis Center, their threat intelligence. We also work very closely with our regional center, or it's called the Boston Regional Intelligence Center, and they provide threat intelligence that's actionable, as well as at the state level, at the Commonwealth, there's a regional information sharing or fusion center that we receive information from. One of the other areas that we've been partnering with is the LA Cyber Lab. They've been a really great source of threat intelligence, and they have a really interesting framework that we're hoping to adopt in order to automate some of that threat intelligence into our technology feeds. And then the last thing we're looking, or Brian and I, as well as a few other CISOs throughout the country, are formalizing the Coalition of City CISOs, which is going to be an organization that can help with threat sharing, with just networking and understanding what other city CISOs are encountering and how we can adopt some best practices that Dallas is doing really great in, or Boston or San Francisco or LA. So we're hoping that this organization will be really helpful in streamlining some of the threat intelligence sharing across municipal government.
That sounds great. I should mention that PTI is a proud sponsor of MSISAC. I'm amazed how many localities still are not members. I mean, they have an impressive list and it grows all the time, but it's free. It's funded by Homeland Security and they have all sorts of tools that can help people, whether you have a CISO or not. I'm always amazed, but it is a great resource and all the others mentioned. Brian, where do you get your information?
So to mirror what Greg said, we leverage basically the same entities, LA Labs, the MSISACA. One thing we do not have right now is our Fusion Center is not built out to really managing cyber threats. So what we have in our strategic plan is really building our own North Texas cyber lab so that we can, you know, share the information from here in Dallas to Boston and all those other entities, what we see. So that's in our game plan for next year, actually.
Cool. So kind of a trick question, fill in the blank. If I could have any resource that I do not now have, what would that be? Greg.
Oh gosh.
And Brian is grateful that you have been asked this question first.
Any resource.
It could be money, more staff, more materials, more monitoring, more software.
I would have to say more staff. We can always use more talented cybersecurity professionals in our field that are really dedicated to public service. I think that would be my top choice.
How many staff do you have now, Greg?
So right now, our team consists of security operations, and that is 6 team members, and then there's another 6 team members on our identity and access management team. So a very small team, but a very competent and hardworking team.
Cool. Brian, what is the missing word that you would use to describe if you had a magic wand? What would be the missing piece?
It would be more time, to be honest. It would want more hours of the day to get us to the state I would like us to be at. It's really, really time. We have resources as far as people, although that would always be nice. But and finances is okay. So that's what I would like, is more hours of the day. If I had one thing, my staff is around 28, but I think my breadth of responsibility is a little more than Greg's. Like, I have e-discovery and change control and some other things within IT that I have to manage. So
that's why I say you guys look very calm and collected, but it's a tough field. I mean, with all the threats out there, are either of you involved with the elections coming up?
We are. We, for the last 3 years, I believe, we've had elections, a cyber elections governance committee, working with our elections department, our Office of Emergency Management, and our Department of Innovation and Technology. So we work very closely with our elections department in order to ensure that we're supporting them however they need. We've also performed some assessments from the EI ISAC, the Elections Infrastructure ISAC. And they've provided really great resources to help ensure that we're doing the best we can to secure our elections processes. And it's been really interesting. That's not an area that I would ever have thought that in my role I would ever be working so closely with. And I've learned a whole lot about behind the scenes, the elections processes. And it's really amazing work that all of our elections officials do.
There are so many moving pieces. Brian, are you involved with the elections at all?
So we are not. It's held at the county level here. What we do, though, is we do a lot of preparation in the city for the elections because we want to make sure the DPD is on board and up to speed, as well as fire and rescue, all of our public safety functions. So no real in the weeds with elections.
Cool. Well, I want to leave it here. We could go on quite a bit, but you've been very helpful in giving us a sense of some of the issues that you face, some of the things that we are all dealing with. And I, my hat's off to all CISOs in this country. I mean, you're doing an amazing role. And Greg, I wish you luck in the elections. I mean, this is going to be quite an interesting year, COVID, elections, and everything else. So Greg and Brian, thank you so much for participating. And we look forward to chatting again real soon.
Thanks, Alan.
Thank you, Alan.
Well, we'll have to leave it there. What a great conversation, and what a great job both of you are doing. You've been listening to Shark Bites, and we've been talking with Greg McCarthy, CISO, Department of Innovation Technology, City of Boston, Massachusetts, and Brian Gartner, who is also a PhD, CISO, Information Technology Services, City of Dallas, Texas. Thank you both for sharing your experiences and your viewpoints. And for all of you who have listening in, please consider subscribing to Shark Bites that comes out every other week. Until next time, we'll see you then.
This has been a production of PTI, the Public Technology Institute. To learn more, visit pti.org.